Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It is May 26, 2020, 7 o'clock. Southeastern North Carolina is where I'm coming to you live from. You are listening to a live show of the Aunt Canary Experience. I'm your host. I got another episode. This is last week's news tonight. I got some news topics we're going to go over tonight, like we always do. Going to go up until about 8:30. Let me make sure all my stuff is okay. If I have time at the end of the show, I'll take calls. If not, then this will be one of the shows where we just educational. All you do is just sit back and listen. And I've got clips to play for you and updates and all that kind of stuff. So before we get to the clips, let me give you some updates. Central Park Karen has been fired. I'm going to play some information on that next week because it's this week's news we play next week. So we'll do that. And what basically, and you probably already heard what she did, is just typical racist bullshit that we got going on in this country right now. A white woman calls the cops on a black man for absolutely nothing. She lies on him. He takes video. The video goes viral. She apologizes, and she gets her ass fired from her job. And she loses her dog, which is just great. It's wonderful. Karma is a bitch. You don't play around with karma. So she pretty much got what she deserved. And people like that just, you know, pitiful. I mean, they're just all over the place. All he wanted her to do was just put a dog on a leash. She went nuts, called the cops, lied. Nobody got arrested, but she got fired, which is good for her. Good for her. And she didn't deserve to have that dog anyway. So she got what she deserved. So we'll talk more about that next week. Also, George Floyd, a black man that was murdered in Minneapolis last night, yesterday, by four cops. The four cops have been fired. Now they need to be put on charges, and they need to be arrested, charged, and thrown in jail for murder. Simple as that. I mean, you can't get any simpler than that. They murdered this man in the street. They came up with excuses like they always do. And they got fired, and now they need to be arrested. Because I'm not mistaken in law, if you don't absolutely have to pull the trigger on somebody to kill them, but if you're in the scheme, if you happen to be nearby or whatever, if you're involved, you will get charged just like the person that actually pulled the trigger or whatever, killing somebody. So these four clowns need to be put up on charges, and they need to be arrested first, put on charges, and then they need to be thrown in jail for murder. I mean, that's just as simple as that. You can't get no plainer than that. That's it. That is it. We'll talk more about that next week. And before I get started on it, I've got a couple more things before I get started. Let me give you the numbers on this worldwide pandemic. Matter of fact, I checked these numbers at 4 o'clock. And then before I came on, I checked them again, and they went up. So at 4 o'clock p.m., according to the Johns Hopkins University website that I think I had told you about last week or the week before, global numbers are right now at 4 o'clock, and I checked the numbers, 5,550,399. That's worldwide. Deaths right now, worldwide deaths, are at 348,302. Now, U.S. cases, right, when I checked at 4 o'clock, were at 1,671,728. When I came online before the show started, I checked again. The numbers went up to 1,676,401. And U.S. deaths, when I checked at 4, stood at 98,636. When I checked again, they stand at 98,787. So when I'm back on with you guys next week, the deaths numbers will have gone up over 100,000. That's next week. So, and I'm going to do some comparisons with those numbers because they're going up. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So I'll update those numbers for you next week. Before we get started, I just want to say this. even though I'm an American and I live in America, America has some of the dumbest ass people I have ever seen in my life. And if you get offended by that, then that's not my problem. America is full of dumb people. America is full of stupid people. America is full of ignorant people. I mean, just ignorance, just dripping out of their ears. You know, America, we seem to have this thing where we always claiming that we are the best country on earth. Nobody is better than us. God only loves America. Jesus only loves America. America can do no wrong. I'm going to tell you tonight, America is full of shit. Americans in this country are just some of the dumbest, I'm going to get Samuel L. Jackson, some of the dumbest motherfuckers around. We had, Memorial Day was yesterday, so a lot of people that did work or whatever, what you know, 3-day weekend, I had to work, which is fine. Extra money for me. I don't, you know, no big deal to me. Now, we're in the middle of a worldwide pandemic, and we still got people saying that this is a hoax, starting with the orange shit-giving sitting in the White House. And his minions that believe and follow everything he does seem to believe the same thing, even though there are people dying from this stuff, people getting sick, people dying. These dead people ain't going to jump out of a closet later on talking about surprise when this is all over with. These people are dead. They ain't coming back. So they don't think it's a hoax. This is the real deal. And you have scientists, you have doctors risking their lives every day on this. You have them giving people advice on how to take, you know, wear a mask in public, 6 feet apart, you know, watch who you're around, all that good stuff. And you still have people saying that this is made up. You have people saying that this is a hoax, this is phony, you know, this was made in the laboratory, blah, blah, blah. You know, I always say, you know, people just out and out just dumb, just straight foolish, stupid, ignorant, just stupid. You know, they would rather listen to the orange shit giving than listen to a damn scientist. You know, I guess he got his medical degree from Trump University, so he knows what he's talking about. But they'd rather listen to him than listen to actual scientists to know what the hell they're talking about. So what do? What do these people do? They go out the weekend. They go to the beach. They go to swimming pools. They do all this stuff, not wearing masks, not doing the 6 feet. You know, they're not doing any of this. And it has been proven that there are people that have this disease. They don't know they have it. They don't show any symptoms. They still have it. And they can still infect people. There was a story that a hairdresser gave it to a whole bunch of people. She went to work sick and gave it to a whole bunch of people. And so what happens? They get it. They go home. They go wherever. And then they spread it. It's the same thing what these fools are doing here. When they go to the beach, they go wherever. They don't know they got it. They take it home, and then they spread it. So these are the same fools running around here talking about they want all this stuff to end so they can go back to doing whatever the hell they were doing before. June is next week. If you got dumbasses like this walking around, these lockdowns are not going to end. You might as well say this is going to go on for the rest of the year because they're going to take this mess to their families, to their children, to their grandparents, and older people that are already sick don't need to get this mess. So they're going to spread it around and give it to other people because they seem to think that this is slavery or this is impeding on their rights and all this bullshit. You are spreading around to some people a fatal disease. But as ignorant people do, they don't care. They don't want to wear a mask, but they'll walk around with damn guns strapped to their back. I guess they think they're going to shoot the virus. But if you tell them to put a mask on, they get offended. America is just full of the dumbest ass people that you, I mean, I'm sorry, they're stupid. They're straight up dumb. So that's why I got a mask in the car. That's why when I'm home, I go out only when I have to go out. I video my grandkids. I don't see them like I used to because I don't want to be one of those people that have it and don't know they have it and then give it to my grandkids. So I talk to them video chat, and I do see them at least once a week, but I don't hang out with them like I used to because I don't want to be responsible for giving them this disease. Not saying I got it, but I haven't been tested. I don't feel sick or anything. But I don't want to take that chance. So I'm not going to take that chance. But you got these people sitting here whining and bitching and moaning and complaining about what they can't do. Nobody wants your sickness. You know, and I've got a clip on this. That's going to be the last clip I talk about. You know, Trump howling about opening up churches. His orange ass didn't go. But, you know, he's trying to play both sides. You know, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's got to get the Trump evangelicals in this because these are the same people that pretend to be so religious and act like assholes when they're not sitting in the church. You know, I call them phony-ass Christians because they ain't nothing Christian about them. So he, you know, wants to, you know, he's hollering about open up the church, the same thing he's doing for schools and all this. Man, who the hell listens to him for medical advice? I don't. I would never get my medical advice from that clown. I wouldn't even get my business advice from that clown because he has no idea what he's doing. He's a total fuck up. So me listening to him for advice? Nah, I don't think so. So these people are running around here all bent out of shape because they can't do certain things. When you got an invisible disease that if it don't kill you, from what I understand, make some people wish they were dead. 2 weeks. And now they're saying, I heard a report on the news today, and they probably won't do it. But a lot of these people that was at the pools and at the beaches and all this kind of stuff, now doctors are saying that if you did any of that, you might need to self-quarantine yourself for 2 weeks. You think these people are going to do that? They're not going to do that. They're going to go right back into whatever they were doing, spreading this shit around, getting people sick, and this is going to go on to the end of the year, I think, because we're about to hit 100,000 people dead in this country. And it's June. And then don't even talk about when flu season hits. So we're going to be dealing with the flu, colds and flus, and this at the end of the year. So I just got a feeling this shit's going to go on until the end of 2020 because nobody wants to do simple stuff. Everybody's bitching about something. Everybody got something. These clowns always got something to bitch about. They always whining about something. I can't do this. I can't do that. My rights are being infringed on. Blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? Black people had to go through this shit for hundreds of years of stuff that my ancestors couldn't do back in the day. So if a doctor tells you, dumbass, to go put on a mask, then just put on a mask. If doctors tell you, dumbass, to wash your hands, wash your hands. You know, it's simple. But we like to pretend that we're the smartest people on the planet. We like to pretend that there's nobody on this planet that are smarter than us Americans. You can't tell us Americans what to do. I got God-given rights. But I have noticed that God only talks to stupid-ass people for some reason. I don't know why. So if God tells your dumb ass to put on a mask, put on a mask. It's pretty simple. If he talks to you like that, if y'all are homeboys, and he tells your dumb ass to go put on a mask, then go put on a mask. Nobody wants to catch your stuff. And then you got people trying to compare Walmart to church. And like I told somebody last night, it's the same arguments with these people because they're just dense. Now, I go to Walmart to buy my stuff and then to go home. I also go to other grocery stores too, but I also carry my mask. When I go into these stores, I got a pretty good idea what I want to get, and then I'm bailing. I'm out. When you go to church, you don't get up and walk around and go aisle to aisle. You go in there, sit down in a seat for 2 hours, and you don't move. So there is no comparison. But these are the same people that are but. You go to Walmart, why can't you go to church? Well, take your simple ass to church if that's what you want to do. But I've noticed that a lot of people that do go to church, you know, they're one way when they walk in there, then they try to pretend they're a certain way when they're in there for 2 hours, and then when they get finished, they come right back out the same way they were when they walked up in there. So this is hypocrisy. So if you want to go to church, take your simple ass to church. And then when you get sick, or be like some of these preachers that said, oh, this is nothing, end up catching it and end up dying, then knock yourself out. Nobody's not making you go. A lot of these churches are not opening because they got enough sense to know what the deal is. So just sit your ass down on a Sunday, open up your laptop or whatever, and just look at a service. You'll be all right. But these churches around here, you know, if you want to do that, go ahead. Nobody's telling you what not, you know. But when you catch it, keep that shit to yourself. Because I don't want it. I don't want to catch it. And I don't want to give it to my kids or my grandchildren or anybody in my family. That's what you want. You keep it. You can spread it around. I don't want to spread it around. Just common sense, you know. You can have book smarts. But if you ain't got common sense, boy, you want them people that just walk in the walls because you ain't got enough sense to know any better. But you want to bitch and complain and moan and groan. Now you see how it is. Oh, boy. Just had to get that rant off. I've got a few more rants to go, but that's the biggest one right there. So when all these people go back home from wherever they were at, I mean, I'm about 2.5 hours from Myrtle Beach. And I thought about last week just driving down, you know, walking, collecting shells, and just breathing in the sea air and then just coming home. Nah, they got too much shit going on down there now. It's like, I don't know if I'm going to do that. If I drive all the way down there, it's going to be a hit and run, go down there and look and then come back. They had murders down there last week. They had all kinds of crazy stuff going on down there last week. And, you know, it's just crazy. It's just straight crazy. So, you know, that's what we got. But my thing is, if you're going to, you know, how about we listen to the doctors instead of listening to everybody else? They say put on a mask, put on a mask. It's just simple. Then you want to bitch, you want to moan, you want to groan, you want to complain. I just don't understand it. I just don't get it. But, you know, it is what it is. So that's my opening rant, I guess you want to call it, before we get to the show. And what I'm going to do now, we have a caller, so I'm going to get this call before I go into the clips, because these clips I have are going to last for about an hour. So I like to try to stay on time because I'm one of those essential people. I have to go to work after I'm finished, and I like to try to get the show done on time. I like, you know, I want to give you the information I got for you, do the show, timely basis, boom, and then I'm out. But before I've got minutes. So let me just grab this call, and I'm looking at my list to see if this is a one of the regular callers I get or if this is a new caller. It looks like it's a new caller, I think. Maybe I don't have my other sheet, but we'll find out in just a second. Let me hit this button. Okay.
Yeah, what's going on?
Hey, caller, welcome to the show. Hey, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? Not much.
I'm fine. How are you?
I didn't know you were playing videos, though. Yeah, I'm all right. I didn't know you were setting up videos and everything for the day, so I ain't going to throw you off schedule too much. I just saw the show.
Nah, you good. What I do is I try to make this like a informational program where I play clips. I talk about them before I play them and just give you, background and I play them just to, try to keep everybody updated on what's happening. There's just too much stuff going on that, I can't do I can't do it all in an hour and a half I got. But I just try to pick out the important ones and then play them and then just give you background on what's going on because there's just a whole lot of stuff going on. I'm glad you called. And I was about to get in those clips now, but that's how I do this show. Whenever I don't have anything, usually I do like one topic, but tonight when I do these shows, I just try to give out as much information as I can. And there's a whole lot of stuff going on and it'd be impossible to do it in just one show, but, but I'm glad you called.
Okay, man. It's all good. So, I guess I just let you roll then, man. Cause I don't know what topic you're for or anything like that. So I was just calling you.
All right. Well, I appreciate your call. I've got six clips and they're all different ones. But before I play them, like I said, I'll tell you what they're about and then I just go ahead and roll into them. So yeah. Excuse me.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm glad you called. I appreciate you.
All right. Have a good one, man.
All right. You too.
Bye.
Bye bye. All right, so we're going to do this first. We're going to get to the clips, but before we get to the clips, we have to play. Where's it? We have to play the music. Hit the music. That's my news music that I play before I jump into the clips. So anyway, clip number one, the orange shit giving meets with black leaders in Detroit. Now this right here, before I play this clip, let me just give you some. This right here, Trump is pathetic. The election is in a few months. He talks shit about minorities. He don't like Mexicans. He don't like Africans. He don't like brown people. He really don't like black people. But since we got an election coming up, and he wants to get back in because he knows that the next day that he's not president anymore, he's probably going to get picked up by the FBI for a lot of shady shit that he's done. So he's trying to get in, not to get in and do the citizens of his country a good job. He's trying to get in to avoid jail time. So he's got to meet with black folk. He's got, 3% black people, black support? And if you're part of that 3% black support, boy, you got issues. You need to get checked because there is no way I'll support this clown. I did a show about 2 years ago where when his father was alive and he was in real estate renting places in New York, they would put the letter C on applications. And according to the people that used to work for him, the letter C stood for color, black. So if they saw an application that didn't have anything on it, it was assumed to be white. But if they saw an application that had a C on it, that was meant for that was meant to stand for black folk, and usually they didn't get a place to rent. This clown does not like black people. He wanted the Central Park Five to be executed for a crime that they didn't commit. He likes to get step and fetch it people, black folk, to be in his crew because it shows that he's not prejudiced, which he is. Fox News got fired. Fox News fired Dirt Rock and Polyester. Hadn't seen them for weeks, And a matter of fact, they are from a town here in North Carolina, which is right up the street from where I live. It's about what, I hadn't been in a while. I think it's like, what, a 30-minute drive from here. And before they, you know, became national buffoons, they used to own, I think, a beauty salon and a travel agency or something like that. So I guess that's what they went back to since they got the boot, because I hadn't seen them anywhere, and Trump hadn't bought them on anywhere. So they must be, or either he's got them in the kitchen doing something, you know. But those two buffoonas, female buffoons, they have not been seen in a while. So this first clip that we're going to play, this is from Roland Martin, I believe. Talks about when he's trying to meet up with black folk, because now, since it's getting to be crunch time, he's going to need help. He's going to need black help. And I'm going to tell you right now, this brother right here, I ain't giving him shit. Only thing I'm going to give him, I'm going to give him a vote for the other guy, because ain't no way I'm voting for this clown. I want him out. So play this clip. Be right back.
You want to support Roland Martin Unfiltered? Be sure to join our Bring the Funk fan club. Every dollar that you give to us supports our daily digital show. There's only one daily digital show out here that keeps it black and keep it real. It's Roland Martin Unfiltered. Support the Roland Martin Unfiltered daily digital show by going to RolandMartinUnfiltered.com. You can make this possible.
All right, folks. Today in Detroit, Donald Trump held a discussion on efforts to help distressed communities recover from the COVID-19 pandemic before touring a Ford manufacturing plant in Ypsilanti Township today. Of course, he didn't wear a mask. He met with national and Detroit area African-American leaders at the Ford Motor Company's Rawsonville plant before touring the facility, which has been repurposed to manufacture ventilators and personal protective equipment. Now, keep in mind, what has also happened is that Ford had to shut down a couple of other plants as they opened because workers tested positive coronavirus. Here is some of what Trump discussed with the black folks.
So than others, and you're making sure that the federal government is also going to cover health costs for those that are uninsured or underinsured. We thank you for this. Our country has been placed on pause, but pause is not stopped. We've been on pause, but we're about to press go and get back going again. I said it before unashamedly, and I say it again. This president has been, I've lived under 12 presidential administrations. I was born during Eisenhower's administration. This president has been the most pro-black president in my lifetime. But when I say pro, I'm saying it pro in the sense of being proactive. He's been proactive rather than reactive to issues concerning minority, underserved, and disadvantaged communities than any other president in my lifetime. I really believe history is going to be kinder to you, Mr. President, than fake news media is today.
Can't be any worse for me.
Hello. Hi, Mr. President. How are you? Such an honor to meet
you. Thank
you.
It's my honor.
Thank you so much. I want to first tell you thank you so much. I am a COVID-19 survivor, and I got diagnosed probably about a month and a half ago as positive. And just sitting at home and, you know, watching TV and heard you talk about hydroxychloroquine, and talked to my doctor. We took it, and within 5 days, I'm here to say I'm good to go. So,
a lot of people have said that.
Yes, and so I want to first.
I go off it tomorrow, I think.
Oh, really?
I took it. Well, I was exposed to a couple of people, and I said, let's give it a shot. The doctor said he recommends it, but I looked at the story of Karen and many others, and I said, what do we have to lose? That's what I said. Anyway, so you had a good experience.
I had an excellent experience.
All right. Pastor Darrell Scott says that he's lived under 12 administrations. First one is Eisenhower. So that means Eisenhower, Kennedy, LBJ, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Obama, Trump. That's 12. There is no way in hell you could remotely compare, Reese, Donald Trump. Out of those 12, there is not a single president, including Obama, that matches President Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Period. If I look at Civil Rights Act of 64, mm-hmm. Voting Rights Act of 65, Fair Housing Act of 68, when I look at, I mean, I can go all, there's, that ain't even a conversation. What the hell is he talking about?
You know what? It's just maybe he's obviously completely delusional, right? I mean, it's more of the Trump grifting that we talked about last week. It's very profitable for him as a black man to sit up there and lie and suck up to Donald Trump. Donald Trump asked us in 2016, what in the hell do you have to lose? Apparently, he feels like he has nothing to lose about pretending or actually taking hydrochloroquine. But let me tell you what we have to lose. Black unemployment right now is 16.7%, maybe even higher. That was April's unemployment rate. We know that we've lost millions of jobs since then. Black people are disproportionately being impacted by this COVID-19 pandemic, whether that's in mortality, whether that's in actual infection rates. So how in the hell is a president who has completely abdicated his responsibility to actually tackle this crisis? How is that making it any better for black folks? I don't know too many black folks that would say right now in May of 2020 that they're better off than they were when Obama was president, or you could go back to the 11 presidents before that, or 10 presidents that Pastor Darrell Scott is referring to. It's really ridiculous, but apparently it works for Pastor Darrell Scott. I don't know who the hell is going to his church. But if you're going to sit up there and lie like that about Donald Trump, then I don't know what else you're going to lie.
Erica, I'm sorry, Daryl. I mean, I appreciate the laughs. I appreciate that. But this whole idea of how Trump has been so proactive towards Black America, how? I mean, where? Okay, so you want to bring up opportunity zones. Opportunity zones ain't new. Those have been in previous administrations, mm-hmm. going back 20 years. I mean, matter of fact, if you really want to, if you want to break this thing up, who was probably the biggest supporter of African Americans with civil rights? Yeah, we could say LBJ. I would dare say, out of the last 12 presidents, who was the most proactive when it came to black business? I say Nixon. Bob Brown, but the office that was created that drove the black businesses, Small Business Administration loans, I can point to that. I'm trying to figure out, Trump ain't even in the top five, top 10. I mean, Trump down there with Reagan when it comes to helping black folks.
Right, the creator of the whole welfare queen term. And then thinking about, I don't trust anybody that pronounces government as government. So that automatically disqualifies me from listening to anything that you have to say. And to praise a person who gained office through Russian interference, that there is a Senate intelligence report that is bipartisan that says as much, I think it takes grifting to a whole nother level, especially when you consider that at the beginning of May, Mitch McConnell opened up the wells of the Senate to do what? To push through judges and leaders of federal agency that will harm him and everybody that was sitting around that table that was as black as the day that they were born. And so I think that we cannot take this with a grain of salt, because we have to make sure that as we continue to move towards the general election, that people aren't buying into this, right? That people are understand that this is a campaign, an active campaign of disinformation and misinformation, and they will use all of those who are willing and ready. And unfortunately, everyone around that table seems to fit that bill.
Again, we invited Daryl Scott. We try to get him on the show. And he keeps saying this stuff to me, and I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. The evidence is remote. It ain't even thin. So there's this idea Trump is just so proactive with black people, I think, is really, really hilarious. It really is.
All right, folks, that's not Robot Unfiltered Video. It's just one moment.
Okay, so that's the end of that clip. Also, I did forget to mention also, and the lady in the clip mentioned it, that right now, I hadn't checked it since last week. I need to check. That it's kind of hard for me to say anything good about this clown, you know, because there's a thing that was going back and forth about, you know, presidents don't make jobs, but when the numbers are a certain way, some like to claim credit for them. So before this pandemic happened, every time you turn around, people trying to give Trump credit for the low black unemployment rate, and that's all you heard them talk about. So the black people that agree with him, that's all they kept. Yeah, you know, yeah. And I'm like, well, he ain't got nothing to do with it because he doesn't go out and actually make jobs. But that's all they kept talking about. So, yeah, just like she said in the clip, now it's sitting at 16.7. So my thing is, if you were giving them credit when the numbers were low, are you going to give them credit for when the numbers are high? You know, you can't just give them credit for the good stuff. You got to give them credit for the bad stuff, too. So when the numbers were like 3-something-something-something or 4, you know, when they were pretty low, you know, oh, look what he's doing. Look what he's doing to the black unemployment rate. Okay. Well, the last time I checked, it's now sitting at 16.7. You might as well just say 17%. You going to give him credit for that? Only credit for when the number's low. You know, just the stupidity that comes out of these people is just it's amazing. Now, the next clip we're going to play, more information about the murder of Ahmaud Arbery. And this talks about the guy that actually did the video. And he got charged with murder also because, you know, the thing that kills me with these, because I remember back in the day when we didn't have mobile phones, if you wanted to videotape something, you know, you had to buy an expensive, camera that we didn't have back in the day. But now everybody's phone has got a video on it. So instead of this clown helping, he wants to film it, then come to find out he's in cahoots with the guys that killed this brother for nothing. So they're going to charge him with murder. And they should. And I'm glad they're doing it. Here's the clip.
There's breaking news we're following right now. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation has made another arrest in the case of Ahmaud Arbery, a young African-American man who was shot and killed while on a jog earlier this year. The fatal shooting was captured on camera and has generated outrage across the country. CNN's Martin Savage is joining us right now. Martin, what are you learning?
Well, if you know, it was that video that changed the whole trajectory of this investigation. As you'll remember, for 2 months, the case was stagnant. And then that shocking video was released. It was William Roddy Bryan, the man who took that video. And he's the man who's now been taken into custody today, exactly 2 weeks from the time that you had Gregory and Travis McMichael that were taken into arrest. Now, the GBI is announcing that Bryan has been taken into custody. He is charged with felony murder. That is the same charge that Travis and Gregory received. But also he's been charged with criminal attempt to commit false imprisonment. There had been a lot of consternation by many here who believed that Bryan, in addition to taking that video, had also apparently participated in trying to detain Arbery on that terrible day. And now authorities have moved on that. His attorney has always maintained that, no, Arbery was just a bystander who happened to be a witness and captured it on his phone. And as we all know, it was that video that changed everything in this case, Wolf. But now he is in custody and in the same jail as the McMichaels. Wolf?
Yeah, you know, we're just getting a statement in, Martin, from the attorneys for the mother and father of Ahmaud Arbery. And let me read it to our viewers. The family of Ahmaud Arbery was relieved to learn that the Georgia Bureau of Investigation has today taken William Roddy Bryan into custody. We called for his arrest from the very beginning of this process. His involvement in the murder of Mr. Arbery was obvious to us and to many around the country. And after their thorough investigation, it was clear the GBI as well. The family of Mr. Arbery is thankful for the diligence of the GBI and the way in which They tirelessly pursued the evidence in this case. We want anyone who participated in the murder of Mr. Arbery to be held accountable. A very strong statement from the family, Martin.
It is indeed, and they're right. This is something that they have been calling for from the very beginning. It's also been something that the supporters of the Arbery family have been asking for. All the protests that have been held have spoken to this very fact that they believe that Brian was not just an innocent witness here, that he somehow was involved. Remember, he was named in two police reports, one of them in which McMichael himself, Gregory McMichael, stated that Roddy attempted to try to use his vehicle to block Ahmaud Arbery on that day. There was another report from authorities that suggested as well that he was a participant. It's interesting, there was a raid that was conducted, a search warrant carried out on the McMichaels' home. That was on Tuesday of this week. We don't know what was found, but you have to wonder, could anything else found in their home have made them decide what to do with Brian?
Very interesting. Martin Savage has been doing excellent reporting on this for us. Martin, thank you very much. I want to bring in Laura Coates, our legal analyst, who's also been doing extensive analysis and reporting on this. What's your reaction, Laura, when you heard of this dramatic development?
This is extraordinarily striking, Wolf, because, you know, felony murder is what he is being charged with. And that is important here because most people think to themselves, if you're not the one who actually fired the gun, then there would not be criminal liability. But felony murder is a doctrine that essentially says, if you participated in the crime, if you were somebody who advised or encouraged or in some way helped another person commit a crime, even if nobody intended to actually kill somebody, the fact that you were engaged in a felony or a crime and there was a foreseeable risk that somebody could be harmed, you can be liable. And so what we're seeing here is a compilation, Wolf, not only what Martin's talking about, but remember, this is about how that video that was captured, that very tragic death of Ahmaud Arbery, was actually more than, 4 minutes long. And people kept wondering, how is it that this man, William Roddy Bryan, was in a position to have his camera ready at just the right time and capture this moment? Was he somebody who participated? Did he actually cut off Ahmaud Arbery with his own car to try to keep him in one position to have this, what people are calling an ambush? That's what was being looked at. And it seems that at least the Georgia Bureau investigation, who recall, Wolf, only took 2 days to decide that arrest was necessary of these two men, Mr. McMichael, Travis, and Gregory, have now found that, look, there is reason to believe that at least there are allegations that can be supported that he participated in this crime and was not simply an innocent bystander. But of course, his attorneys will obviously argue that as a defense to felony murder, that he was simply in the right place for filming, but at the wrong time and was innocent.
And as you point out, William Bryan, who was just arrested, charged with felony murder, he's the one who filmed that incident. We've all seen the video by now. And at one point, he got into his car to follow Arbery. So what do you make of the way this all has unfolded over these past several days so dramatically and relatatively quickly, even though there were, a couple of months between the time of the shooting and the time of the arrests of the father and son and now Brian?
Well, this tells you the accelerated pace at which they were able to determine that there was probable cause to make these arrests. Imagine the comparison when it took more than 80 days for the initial two, the father and son, Gregory McMichael and Travis McMichael, to even be arrested. If they were able to have all of this evidence closer in time to the actual killing of Ahmaud Arbery, one would believe you'd be able to draw the same conclusions even closer to the crime. So it tells you that there is the need for the Department of Justice, at least in part, Wolf, to review the prosecutorial conduct in this case to assess whether there was any bias and undue influence exerted to put a thumb on the scales of justice in favor of the McMichaels, in favor of William Bryan, and against the best interest of the family of Ahmaud Arbery. It'll all be crucial to look at this holistically. But what is true here is that they were not buying, for whatever reason, the GBI and the prosecutor now handling the case, that this was pure coincidence, that Roddy Bryan purely coincidentally was in the area at this time. And instead, it speaks to the fact that they think, rather than coincidence, This was someone who was complicit in the crime. And like Martin Savage reported, you have to wonder, this coming so closely at the heels of having them search the homes of the McMichaels, what information did they glean? And did that even more so accelerate the decision to arrest Roddy Bryan?
Very interesting. And as you point out, there are calls now on the Justice Department here in Washington to get involved in this case. Would you expect the Attorney General Bill Barr to take any action?
Well, you know, this would come down fundamentally to two factors. Number one, it depends on what type of crime they are investigating, whether it's the Civil Rights Division looking at perhaps a hate crime. Remember, Georgia does not have a statute for a hate crime prevention. Is there evidence to suggest that there is a racial motivation or a profiling that led to the death of Ahmaud Arbery? Many would speculate that is indeed the case, but it's a hard case to prove without a sort of a manifesto like we've had in the Dylann Roof cases and other acts that have happened. But the other issue is, this is a matter of investigating the prosecutors in this case. And when you're talking about prosecutorial misconduct in the handling of the case, in the investigation, or in a way that was contrary to the rights of people to be able to have justice served or at least, sought after, that will be an interesting thing to discuss about whether the Justice Department, as I knew it, as a civil rights attorney that I was for the Justice Department, would have looked at a case like this and said, if there was a concerted effort by multiple prosecutors to try to cover up a crime of a former, colleague, if that's what happened, this is ripe for Justice Department review, and law enforcement out there in the world should be particularly vexed by any instance of a citizen, a civilian, trying to usurp the role of them, as opposed to calling 911 and getting properly trained police officers in the area to actually inquire and give the runner, the jogger, Ahmaud Arbery, the human being, the benefit of the doubt, the presumption of innocence, and at least the dignity of an investigation.
In other words, I think this was a damn setup. They knew what they were doing. They needed somebody to tape it. They thought it would be cool. Yeah, it's a setup. And they all, I don't know what they got down in Georgia, but if they got the chair, all three of these clowns need to get it. And anybody else involved needs to get the chair. Or better yet, I used to work at a prison. Better yet, give these three clowns life in prison, and then put them in the dormitory where the brothers are, and just leave it alone, and karma will take care of the rest. Okay, third clip talks about a study that doctors did on this medicine that the orange shit-giving claimed that he was taking. A lot of people saying he wasn't taking this medicine. Come to find out, through some reading that I was doing, and I can't say the name of this medicine. It's just it messes me up. But come to find out, a lot of people think that this medicine that he claims that he was taking, he's got some kind of financial stake in it. So he figures if he gets out and talks about it enough and gets people to buy it, then that puts money in his pocket. So this guy is a grifter. He's a scam artist. He's a piece of shit. Come to find out, this medication doesn't do anything for you if you have the coronavirus. So let's play this clip.
A large new study links hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine to a higher risk of death in coronavirus patients. Researchers looked at seriously ill infected patients in more than 600 hospitals worldwide, and those treated with either medication were more likely to die or develop a heart condition. Now, keep in mind, this is the drug that the president has called a game changer.
If things don't go as planned, it's not going to kill anybody. It will be wonderful. It'll be so beautiful. It'll be a gift from heaven if it works.
If some other person put it forward, they'd say, oh, let's go with it. What do you have to lose?
Try it if you'd like. I've seen things that I sort of like, so what do I know? I'm not a doctor, but I have common sense. I think it gives you an additional level of safety, but you can ask many doctors who are in favor of it.
it's had a great reputation. And if it was somebody else other than me, people would say, gee, isn't that smart?
A lot of people swear by it. It's gotten a bad reputation only because I'm promoting it. So I'm obviously a very bad promoter.
I've taken it, I think, just about 2 weeks. I think it's another day. So, and I'm still here.
What do you have to lose, he asked. Well, potentially your life. Elizabeth Cohen is CNN's senior medical correspondent. Dr. Jorge Rodriguez is an internal medicine and viral specialist. Elizabeth, let's dive into the specifics about what this large study found. Tell me about these increases in risk for both death and heart problems.
All right, Brianna, let's just jump into these numbers. This is a study that was led by folks at Harvard and was published in The Lancet just today. They looked at six patients in 671 hospitals. So these were hospitalized, coronavirus patients on six continents. Nearly 15,000 of these patients receiving hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine, often in combination with other drugs. What they found is that those who were taking hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine were 33 to 45% more likely to die, even after they adjusted, because there were some differences between patients who weren't taking the drug, who were taking the drugs, and a control group who was not. Also, the patients taking the drugs were between 2.4 and 5 times more likely to develop heart arrhythmias. Again, these are hospitalized patients, but still, President Trump has painted, as we just saw, with a broad brush, saying, why not try it? This study tells you why not try it.
I mean, doctor, 45%, Elizabeth, more likely to die?
Right.
Those are staggering numbers, and yet the sales of hydroxychloroquine reportedly doubled in March. So who's prescribing these drugs?
I'm not. So I don't know who's prescribing them, but this is the mother of all studies right now. This was 96,000 patients that were followed since they looked at their charts from since last December to April. Let me put it this way. People were sick to begin with. If you didn't take any of these medications, 9% of the people died. If you took the combination of hydroxychloroquine and an antibiotic, 25% died. That is three times more people died when on this medication. Desperate times, some people start doing desperate things. And that is what is so dangerous, that the President of the United States is saying, hey, this is nothing. Well, it is something, and it's something very dangerous. And on top of that, all right, if not followed correctly, you have almost a 10 times greater chance of having heart arrhythmias. This medication, the hydroxychloroquine, can prolong the time between the chambers of the heart communicating with each other, and you can have all these erratic arrhythmias. So if people wanted proof, there already has been proof that hydroxychloroquine does not help with the COVID virus, but now there's proof that not only doesn't it help, but when you're really sick, it is life-threatening and dangerous, period.
And there's also this smaller VA study, Elizabeth. It's a lot like this one that also found higher risk of death. Here's what the president said when he was asked about that.
There was a false study done where they gave it to very sick people, extremely sick people, people that were ready to die. It was given by obviously not friends of the administration. And the study came out, the people were ready to die. Everybody was old. That study was a phony study put out by the VA. A lot of people are taking it. A lot of doctors are taking it. A lot of people swear by it. It's gotten a bad reputation only because I'm promoting it.
He said it's not friends of the administration. I mean, I guess that's sort of true because it is the administration, right? This is a VA study.
But the VA is a part of the government, so if
that's
anyone
right.
was going to be a friend of Trump, it would be the VA. So that completely
right.
doesn't make sense. But we don't even have to go to the VA study. There have been two studies, one published in the New England Journal of Medicine, the other published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, that were significantly larger than the VA study that showed that hydroxychloroquine didn't work. So I don't know why he's harping on this VA study. It's smaller, to look at the two that are larger that were published in prestigious medical journals that showed that it didn't work. And one of those also showed that it made heart arrhythmias more, you know, that people who took the drugs were more likely to have heart arrhythmias. And now we have this third study, which, as Dr. Rodriguez just said, is the mother of all studies. So we have a study in The Lancet, in New England Journal of Medicine, and the Journal of the American Medical Association, all pointing to concerns. Does he think all of them hate Trump? Is that it? Does he think the entire world is conspiring against him? That's dangerous right there. I mean, you've three studies in three prominent medical journals. I don't know what more he wants.
Yeah, these are scientific studies. They're looking to get the answers so that people can stay healthy. Doctor, if you could also fact check for us this idea that there could be a different impact on people using it preventatively versus when they're hospitalized. He seemed to kind of be making that point. Talk to us about that.
That is exactly what I was going to say. As of now, there is absolutely no evidence. There has been no study that has shown that taking hydroxychloroquine prophylactically, which means to prevent getting the COVID virus, is helpful. So there is a study, I believe, going on with healthcare workers that are taking it, but this is a study. Studies have to be objective. And there's enough anecdotal evidence that people that are on hydroxychloroquine, for example, for other illnesses like lupus, still get infected. It logically makes no sense that an antibacterial drug like hydroxychloroquine will help against a virus. Never has that happened. So there is no proof that it's a preventative.
You mentioned this global study. This is coordinated by Washington University in St. Louis. It's testing this on 30,000 frontline workers across the world. So in light of these findings, do you think that that study should continue?
Yeah, I think it should continue for the simple reason that it is a controlled study. It is on people that are not sick. And you know what? This needs to be put to bed once and for all. And until something can be shown that it doesn't conclusively help, people are still going to latch on to mystical, magical thinking if that's what they want to believe in. Again, there's anecdotal evidence and lots of it that people that are on this medication for other diseases still get the COVID-19 virus. So yeah, this study should continue. Let's see what it shows.
Yeah, with that many workers, it's a very large sample. And Elizabeth, let's talk about some other major medical news. There are some early results from a human vaccine trial in China. Tell us about this.
You know, it's interesting. This is the first time we've seen published evidence of what a vaccine can do for humans. And I will say that we talked to two experts. It's a study done in China. We talked to two experts in the U.S. They were not impressed. And those are their words, not mine. They are not impressed with these results. Let's take a look at what they found. It was 108 study subjects, and this is by CanSino, a Chinese company. And nearly half of them developed a fever when they were vaccinated. It went away, but that was of concern to the doctors. Also, the folks who took this at low and medium doses, because you could have taken it at low, medium, or high, folks who took it at low and medium doses, half of them did not develop neutralizing antibodies. And that's kind of the standard. You want neutralizing antibodies. Half of them did not. At the high dosage, they saw even more side effects, and so they're not even continuing on with that. So the two doses that they're going to continue on with, only half of the people so far have had neutralizing antibodies develop. Again, some questions as to how powerful this is. One doctor we talked to said that they ought to just hang it up. They should be done with this because this showed it didn't work. Another doctor we talked to said, it's worth investigating some more. But certainly no one seems to be jumping up and down about these results.
Okay, now we're going to go to the next clip. And when I found this clip, I thought it was interesting to add this because I remember when right when this virus got here and it was infecting people, there was a rumor going around saying that the virus wasn't affecting black people. Come to find out, it was affecting black people. And there was also some stuff going around that saying that it wasn't affecting children. Well, come to find out, it does affect children. So, but this clip talks about why it affects black people the hardest. And as weeks and weeks, went on, we figured out why it affects black people the hardest because of the medical system, some of it,
that we have in this country. That's why. So play this and make sure I got the right one. Yep, play this and I'll be right back.
Here along the Mississippi River between New Orleans and Baton Rouge is an 85-mile stretch of land known as Cancer Alley. For decades, some communities living in this part of Louisiana have reported disproportionately high rates of respiratory diseases and cancer. In one part of a parish called St. John the Baptist, a person's lifetime risk of getting cancer is 50 times greater than that of the average American. And now it also has one of the highest COVID-19 death rates per capita in the country. A closer look reveals that the community here is predominantly Black, and that figures into an alarming pattern. Across the country, Black people are dying at disproportionate rates compared to their populations. While there are many historical and structural inequalities at play, one part of the problem may be lurking in the air. Louisiana has some of the most toxic air in the U.S. For decades, oil, gas, chemicals, and plastics have been manufactured here. Much of it comes from the roughly 200 chemical plants and oil refineries which dot this corridor on the banks of the Mississippi River.
They call it Cancer Alley. They are afraid that this air, the very air that I'm breathing right now, is so filled with carcinogens that they have labeled the river area a national sacrifice zone.
The industry emits dozens of different chemicals that are known to cause cancer, along with something called PM2.5, which causes fine particle pollution. When exposed to it, these tiny particles, just a fraction of the width of a human hair, can lodge deep in our lungs and bloodstream, and can lead to health problems like heart disease, asthma, and lung cancer. The Environmental Protection Agency's estimates of cancer risk from air toxicity are far higher in this region than much of the rest of the country, and they follow the path of the petrochemical industry. But even within these high-risk areas, here along the Mississippi and across the country, these risks are not distributed equally among communities. One EPA analysis found that Black people are exposed to about 1.5 times more particle pollution than white people. For example, even though St. John the Baptist is 58% Black, the community closest to this chemical plant is 92% Black.
It is not a mystery. It is not, you know, voodoo. This is real.
That's Robert Bullard, who's been researching urban planning and environmental policy for decades and has written 18 books on it.
Because of housing discrimination and because of residential segregation, the history of this country is tied to race and place.
Here along Cancer Alley, the history of the communities goes back to slavery. This map shows that the area used to be mostly sugar plantations. After slavery ended, many free Black people stayed in the area and established Black communities on or near plantations like these. Others continued to be exploited through a system called sharecropping, where white plantation owners gave Black farmers access to land in exchange for a portion of their crop as rent. Landowners often manipulated prices to make a profit, while pushing Black laborers into debt and poverty. The practice continued for nearly a century, until the 1940s when a new industry took off in Louisiana, and petrochemical plants started replacing these plantations.
They were invited into the state and into the corridor without the permission of the people who live closest. These many decisions were made when people of color didn't have representatives.
Companies set up their facilities right next to the historically Black communities, but most of the jobs at the plants didn't go to them.
And the community is left with pollution, poverty, and sickness, and in some cases, death.
Corporations often bought out entire towns, like here in Reveal Town, where the Georgia Gulf Corporation bought out the town, and today there's still a historically Black cemetery within the grounds of a chemical plant.
Power and money dictate where things goal that other people don't want. That's how we end up right now with all of these, we call sacrifice zones. These places that are overpolluted have more than their fair share of poverty and sicknesses.
Toxic industries have been established near communities of color across the U.S., like mining operations and power plants on and near Native American reservations. And in more urban areas, racist public policies like redlining have historically marked Black and brown neighborhoods as less desirable, pushing polluters like highways and factories closer to their homes.
Zip code is still the most potent predictor of health and well-being. You tell me your zip code, I can tell you how healthy you are. And I can tell you what's in your neighborhood and what's not in your neighborhood.
One analysis of 8 cities shows residents of historically redlined neighborhoods live with significantly higher levels of air pollution and are more than twice as likely as their peers to visit emergency rooms for asthma today. The research draws a strong connection between history and health, and how even now, 80 years after these maps were drawn, they still play a role in not just where people live, but how healthy they are.
All these things converge, and then you get this pandemic. You get this heat-seeking missile that is targeting, that is zeroing in on the most vulnerable community. And when it targets that community, what we end up is a death bomb.
The health problems that air pollution exposure can lead to, like heart and respiratory diseases, are the same underlying conditions that can make coronavirus much more dangerous. One preprint study made a clear link between air pollution and more severe coronavirus cases by analyzing over 3,000 U.S. counties and controlling for certain factors. They found that counties with higher exposures to air pollution also had higher probabilities of deadly coronavirus cases. In their analysis, a small increase in long-term exposure to air pollution led to a large increase in the COVID-19 death rate. And although we should be cautious with this preliminary data, the findings underscore a possible reason why the coronavirus has been particularly deadly in Black communities. In Louisiana, Black residents make up 32% of the population, but they made up 56% of COVID-19 deaths. And in Michigan, 14% of the population, but 41% of deaths.
The coronavirus is actually bringing to the surface what many of us have known for many years. People already have all these underlying conditions because of where they live, because of not having access to health care, because not having health insurance, not having, you know, the kinds of things that make people healthy in terms of the built environment. And so it is not surprising. It's disappointing, and it makes you angry.
In March, the Trump administration suspended clean air protections across the country. So in Louisiana's Cancer Alley, that means petrochemical facilities will now have no oversight over how much they pollute. And even though we are just starting to learn about the connections between pollution exposure and severe coronavirus outcomes, it's a move that ignores the history and research that precedes it of how segregation, pollution, and health in Black communities are inextricably linked.
Yep, well, that's America for you. Two more clips to go. This next clip, I'm sure you heard about this over the weekend. Joe Biden did an interview with the radio morning show, The Breakfast Club. And I listen to The Breakfast Club. They do have interesting topics on there every now and again. Only thing I don't like about Breakfast Club is the music. I'm an old head. I'm old school. And a lot of the music that they play sucks. But, hey, what do I know? And I think they play it, like, every day. And they're just songs that I don't like. But other than that, the interviews that they have on there are pretty interesting. So they have some interesting topics on there. So this happened last week. Joe Biden was on. He said some stuff, and people are pretending to be outraged, but I'm not, because I know exactly what he was talking about. So let's play this right quick.
Tonight, Joe Biden saying he regrets a comment he made about the black vote. Here's what he said.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions, but I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
It don't have nothing to do with Trump. It has to do with the fact I want something for my community.
Out front now, Charlemagne the God, who you just saw there interviewing Biden on his radio show, The Breakfast Club. And Charlemagne, it's good to be with you. Hopefully
Aaron.
In person at some point. Obviously not this time, but look, I want to play more of your exchange because it was a lengthy exchange and there was a lot of substance in there, but obviously it is that moment which has gotten, you know, so much attention here. What was your initial reaction when you heard Biden say, quote, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black?
My initial reaction was exactly what I said. You know, that's what my focus was. You know, it's not about Trump. It's about who is going to present the best deal for black people, who is going to have an economic justice plan for black people, who is going to finally give black people what they are owed for building this country. You know, slavery was America's original sin that this country is not repented for. And, you know, and to fix the systemic wrongs that have been done by the black community, you have to create legislation and policies and plans to counter that. And I'm on board with whoever is offering that. I vote my interest and my interests of black peers. So what I said to him, that was my initial reaction.
So you're saying, though, and I, you know, I just want to make this clear because, you know, I know all the Democratic candidates, you know, they came through your show. But are you saying you are open then to voting for Trump? Like the choices are Trump and Biden.
No.
So
I'm definitely not saying that. I'm just saying that, you know, being that black people have been so loyal to the Democratic Party and, you know, we saved Joe Biden's political life in the primaries this year. I feel like, you know, they owe. Mm. Simple as that. You know, I'm not going to go to the person that, you know. Like if I was a woman, right, and I was, you know, dating a guy, the guy that I have been dealing with the longest, that's who I'm gonna go to and ask something of. Now this new person may try to woo me, but you know, I can't really take him serious. I'm gonna go to the person that, you know, I feel like I owe something to. And
right.
That's how I look at it.
Right. And I understand what you're saying. You're saying, you know, okay, this is, you're not gonna vote for Trump, but you don't just take it for granted. Don't just say just because I'm here, I'm going to vote for you. Okay, so I just want to make the point. Obviously, that was the moment that everyone's talking about. But this was about, in your interview, you had about 18 minutes where you were specifically talking about Biden's agenda for black America. And I just wanted to play a brief clip of that so people could understand more of the substance here of your conversation.
A lot of black voters, including myself, feel, and that's that Democrats take black voters for granted.
I want a larger share of the black vote than anybody has, including Barack. They're the folks, as they say it my way, brung me to the dance. That's how I got elected.
We had Hillary on a few years ago, and Ms. Clinton said that the crime bill, we made a lot of mistakes with that, and she wanted to atone for that by becoming the next president. Like,
she was wrong. What happened was it wasn't the crime bill. It was the drug legislation.
Thank you so much. That's really our time. I apologize.
You can't do that to the black media.
I do that to white media and black media because my wife has to go on at 6 o'clock.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions. But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
All right, so that included someone on his team, you know, trying to cut in and saying, thanks so much for your time. I apologize, trying to end it. Mm-hmm. What was your overall takeaway from the conversation?
My overall takeaway from the conversation was I heard him, you know, talking about, you know, things that he did for black people back in the day. But, you know, what have you done for me lately is my motto. You know, I see black communities all across America catching hell regardless of who's in the White House. And, you know, people like to bring up coronavirus and how it's hitting black people the hardest. Well, that's because we have a bunch of underlying conditions created by systemic racism that have never been fixed. You know, and like I said before, if you created legislation that hurt, then you have to create legislation that helps. It's just that simple. Like, the whole system needs to be dismantled and rebuilt. And he's been a very intricate part of that system. You know, whether you're talking about, you know, in 84 with the mandatory minimum sentences for drug dealers, or you're talking about 86 with the crack laws that gave you more time for crack cocaine and powder cocaine. Are you talking about the 94 crime bill? Like, he was, you know, really one of the people on the front line when it came to the war on drugs and mass incarceration. So I think that, you know, if he wants to be president, He needs to fix that. He needs to really, really, you know, help the people that have helped Democrats all of these years.
So, Charlamagne, you know, later on today, he walked back his comment in a call with the U.S. Black Chamber of Commerce this afternoon, and specifically about the idea that just because you're black, you would vote for him as a Democrat. Here's part of what he said to them.
I shouldn't have been such a wise guy. I shouldn't have been so cavalier. No one should have to vote for any party based on their race, their religion, their background.
I mean, so that's what you're saying, but you're saying he still hasn't shown you why you would vote for him specifically.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that simple. Like, he has a black agenda called the Lift Every Voice plan. And I mean, there's some cool things in there, but I still think that it could be much stronger. He's already committed to having a black woman on the Supreme Court. And I think that, you know, a black woman running mate is necessary, especially after the day, you know. And like, the statement he made was interesting, you know, because that's something I hear from other black people. You know, it's very interesting to see that a old white man also looks at black people in that way. Like, that question, what makes somebody black? That's a discussion for black people to have, you know. And a white man is certainly not qualified to have that discussion. But people do connect blackness to support and protection of black culture. So I guess when we see a black person voting for Trump, and you know Trump is a threat to marginalized people in this country, it does make you question how much that person cares about his people. So I understand the statement is just a shot coming from a whole white man like Joe Biden. It was a real Bulwark moment, if you've ever seen that movie.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, Charlamagne. I always like talking to you.
Yeah, I like talking to you, too. And I just want to stress, man, that, you know, it is very important that, you know, he makes a black woman his running mate. You know, it's too many sisters that are overly qualified for the position. Stacey Abrams of Georgia, Val Demings of Florida, you know, Senator Kamala Harris. Like, it's just too many sisters out there for him to just look past.
All right. Well, Charlamagne, thanks. I know he did tell you today there are multiple black women.
Okay. So that's the end of that clip. So the last clip we've got, and that'll be the end of the show. The on shit given made comments about opening up churches, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Well, this was a holiday weekend. And did that clown go to church Sunday? Hell no. He played golf. If he would ever step in a church, he'd probably catch on fire. But this is his last clip, so let's play this. This is interesting.
The president will strongly encourage every governor to allow their churches to reopen. And boy, it's interesting to be in a room that desperately wants to seem to see these churches and houses of worship stay closed.
The president said that he has that.
Haley, I object to that. I mean, I go to church. I'm dying to go back to church. The question that we're asking you and would like to have asked the president and Dr. Burke is it safe? And if it's not safe, is the president trying to encourage that? Or does the president agree with Dr. Burke that people should wait?
Jeff, it is safe to reopen your churches if you do so in accordance with the guidelines.
Look, the bottom line is this. The president should not be the one to tell people to go to houses of worship, where, of course, big groups can congregate. That decision should be made by the governors in each state based upon the facts and science in their state. Out front tonight, Jeff Mason. He's the White House correspondent for Reuters, and you just saw him in that exchange with Kayleigh McEnany. So, Jeff, let me just ask you, what went through your mind when the press secretary, you know, said what she said, you know, that she's just, you know, amazed to be in a room where people want to keep churches closed? I mean, I thought the tone in your voice was pretty clear. You're dying to go back to church.
Well, I happen to be somebody who goes to church, and it felt very much like she was giving a broad brush statement about everyone in that room. And the truth is, we were in that room and are every day to ask questions and to get to the truth, to get to the facts behind these decisions. And the president didn't address that. Kayleigh didn't address it by good questioning or under good questioning from my colleagues. And then she made that sort of broad brush statement that we all don't want churches and synagogues and mosques to be open. And it's just simply not true. And a lot of people in that room are people who go to those places of worship and would like to go back. I'm one of them.
So why do you think she said that? Why would she say that reporters want to see the churches and houses of worship stay closed?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's part of an effort by this White House and by President Trump's campaign to make the media a scapegoat or to encourage his supporters to object to our reporting with statements like that. So I think it's consistent with that kind of an effort. The president often works particularly well when he's got a boogeyman or somebody else to blame, and that seems to be part of the same playbook that Kayleigh was using.
So, Jeff, please stay with me. I want to add in David Gregory to our conversation, our political analyst who's also the author of How's Your Faith? An Unlikely Spiritual Journey, and Father Edward Beck, our religion commentator. So, David, you've written about faith. You covered the Bush White House for many years. What is the Trump White House trying to do here?
Well, first let me say I thought Jeff, who's been a colleague for years, handled that very elegantly and appropriately to push back. I mean, I just think that what Kayleigh said was beneath her, frankly, as press secretary, and who is someone who I know and who happens to be a person of deep faith herself. I thought that was a cheap shot that obscured the more important point, which is, should houses of worship be considered essential? I think the president's right. I mean, I think they are essential. And I think it's an important debate to have. You can be on either side of that. But right now, there are so many people who have such a deep spiritual longing to be able to pray and to pray in community. And they're being deprived of that. And it's really, really hard under these circumstances. And I think we all need to appreciate that. That's a separate debate from the question of whether you can do so safely. And that's the job of reporters in the White House briefing room to push back on that and to say, how do you do it safely? Let's think about it for a second. In a lot of faith communities, core members of those communities tend to be older, who would be more vulnerable. So how would you do it safely? That's an important consideration. And of course, I think the president very often undermines an important point that he was making today about the value of faith in people's lives, particularly during this pandemic, by suggesting he would override the governors, which of course he can't do as a constitutional matter.
So Father Beck, how do you feel about this? I mean, you know, that the White House saying, well, they'll just tell people those houses of worship are open, no matter what the governors say. As a person of faith, you have obviously your flock. How do you feel about this?
Well, first of all, my feeling is we have been doing essential services. I mean, I've done funerals at gravesides. We've anointed the sick. You know, we've ministered to people over the phone. We've said virtual masses. I've heard a confession in a supermarket parking lot. So it's not like religious services have not been being tended to. Now, of course, what the president is referring to is mass religious services, like mass gatherings. And what we're told by health officials right now is that it's not safe to do it in that way. So why not let the governors and the religious authorities get a plan together, which they have been doing, by the way. I mean, we're set to open incrementally and safely, but to simply say everybody open at the same time now, I mean, that's not about religious freedom. That's about courting illness and death. That's about ignorance. And I just don't know why people who don't have a certain expertise would speak about things that it really is not their field to speak about.
But I mean, Jeff, I obviously really appreciate where Father Beck is coming from, but at the same time, we do designate certain services, whether it's a supermarket, there's lots of liquor stores that are open. We designate certain things that are essential, and then we try to figure out how to safely do that. So, you know, I'm Jewish, and among particularly Orthodox Jews, minyanim, you know, to convene a minyan where you need 10 men. You know, those restrictions have been loosened in New York so they can do that safely. So I think the point is that it's fair to have this debate and this conversation about whether this should be considered essential and then how you do it. What I don't like, and what I agree with Father Beck about, we don't want to court illness, and I don't like it becoming a kind of political litmus test. And that's what it can devolve into, that it basically you're either with the liberal press that's all secular, or you're with people of faith, and that's not the choice. That's totally inappropriate. That's not what's right. We can say that absolutely this is an essential gathering, an essential service, if you will, to be able to pray in community, to be able to shake hands with people and offer the peace and so forth, and still focus on the safety question.
Well, and Jeff, you know, the president said this specifically about the, you know, what is right and what is wrong, to the point David's making. Let me just play what he said, Jeff.
The governors need to do the right thing and allow these very important essential places of faith to open right now for this weekend. If they don't do it, I will override the governors.
Obviously, Jeff, he can't override the governors. We just need to make that point loud and clear. Again, it is he does not have the constitutional right to do so. But it also appears that he is trying to make this into a him and people of faith versus the godless media in that case. But he misses what Father Beck was just saying, which is that these important places of faith have been there and are there for people right now. And they are opening carefully and slowly and not courting death, but that very important point, Jeff.
Yeah, and I think it's also very clear that these places of worship also want their parishioners to be safe. So when the president makes it a question of right or wrong, I think that people who are making these decisions, both at the local and state levels, but then also at the church and synagogue and mosque levels, you know, they're not weighing right or wrong. They're weighing safety and being able to provide services to the people who are members of their congregations or houses of worship. I got an email from a very senior leader of a Christian church today after that exchange, who said that church leaders and other religious leaders had been working with the CDC on these guidelines and felt that this rushed announcement today ended up undermining the work that they had done, because they were working together to try and find the right way to reopen and the right time.
And Father Beck, what are the steps here? And I know you made that point. You've been working with the authorities, the government. What are the steps here? You know, how does opening look when people can actually come in and congregate?
Well, they're beginning with allowing only 10 at a time. So it's going to almost be like not a full congregation, obviously, if you have 10 people. They're taking all the necessary precautions. They're emptying the holy water fonts, coming to communion one by one. I know of one parish that's actually having plexiglass in front of the priest, and he's just going to give communion under the plexiglass. They're asking everybody to receive in the hands for the most part, so they're not receiving on the tongue. If you happen to touch somebody's hand, you then have to sanitize your hands before you give communion to the next person. They're having ushers escort people to their seats and out of the church, making sure people come in one by one. So it's very specific, but they need to do it incrementally, because not everybody is in the same place right now. Not every diocese is in the same position of being ready. Not every state is in the same position of being ready. So how do you give a federal dictate for something that's a local issue?
There's also the consumer confidence point, which is, what are individuals going to do? The president can say what he wants. Governors can say what they want. The truth is, individuals have to make a decision about whether they're comfortable going into a large gathering space. And it really is highly individualistic. I've been with friends to a Catholic mass in Washington, D.C., that's sparsely populated. I've also been to Joel Osteen's church in Houston, where there are thousands of people who come for a Sunday service. That's simply not tenable right now.
All right. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, that's the end of the show. And let me say this, that the Orange Shit-Giving made a big deal about opening up churches this past weekend, but his sorry ass wasn't at church. He was out playing golf, as usual. So that clown talks out of both sides of his neck. And that will do it for this week's episode. I'll be back next week. Like I said earlier, I'll keep you updated on the murder in Minneapolis and other things that happened this week. And I'm sure there's going to be a whole lot of crazy stuff going on. So I'll keep you updated next week. Until then, I will see you in 7 days. Peace out.